IVM.
Hello, welcome to the second episode of the Sponge Podcast with Ambi Parmeswaran. Today we're going to be talking about the second chapter of his book, Sponge, Leadership Lessons I Learned from My Clients. So Ambi, I got the first question that I want to ask after reading this chapter, and it came to me as soon as I read the first three pages, and is there an IIM Calcutta mafia in the brand business?
No. The truth is, IIM Calcutta and IIM Ahmedabad are the oldest, IIM. So, as a result, we have a lot more of us floating around in the system.
Right.
And as they say, either the cream rises to the top or whatever. So, you end up actually dealing with a lot of these IIM Calcutta, IIM Ahmedabad, IIM Bangalore people. So, it's just, I think... Just a coincidence that, you know, in that particular chapter, the first three names you read are all IIM Calcutta folks. But, you know, later in the chapter, there are several others whom I mentioned.
Sure, of course.
Were from other IIM. So IIM.
Oh, so it's an IIM mafia, if it's not an IIM Calcutta mafia, at least.
No, but I am biased towards IIM Calcutta because I spent 2 years there. So but, the, you know, but they're, yeah, I mean, like, you know, higher education institutions everywhere in the world have a kind of a brotherhood, so to speak.
Okay. So if I can make a little bit of an analogy, the IIMs are like the mafia, and the Calcutta and the Ahmedabad and the Bangalore are like families inside the mafia.
Well, I don't know what they call them mafia, but yeah, we are a bunch of brothers, you know, together, you know.
All mafia language.
And then we make offers that you can't refuse.
Awesome. Okay. So, you know, speaking of clients, right, you were talking a little bit inside the book, you mentioned something about how you have different kinds of clients. Some are clients who argue about everything, but even after arguing and running you through the paces, they'll more or less accept what you think. And some of them are clients who just accept everything that you will take to them, right? Can you talk a little bit about how these two different kinds of clients are a little challenging to work with? What are the different challenges that come up with these kinds of clients?
You know, the clients who question everything you take to them pose one level of challenge, which is, you know, therefore, you got to have your arguments ready, you know, how to. So very often before you go to meet a client like that, and I'm sure they do that in law firms, they do that in financial services firms, that you do a mock drill in the office and, you know, find out what are the objections the client may have. And if you don't have enough answers for those objections, don't take the stuff. You know, you're going to get shot down. The other client who actually accepts whatever you present is actually, in my mind, a scary client. Because if you take something which is, you know, not right for the brand or not right for the business, he may approve it. Mm-hmm. In which case, you're going to be stuck with a problem to solve in the long run, or you're going to lose the client.
Right.
So if a client is someone who kind of accepts everything you take, then you got to be even more worried about what you're presenting to them. So just because the client is a pussycat, you know, you can't take anything and throw it at him. You know?
Right.
One of these days, the pussycat is going to turn into a tiger and eat you. So, so you better watch out for that.
Fair enough. So you had mentioned a little bit how there is a challenge with when you're talking to different clients, right? And you take the multiple ideas. How do you make it so that the right ideas are put across to them, right? So I mean, like, and does that vary from different types of clients?
Well, I think... one of the cardinal rules in any business is that if you're taking multiple alternatives, don't take alternatives which you're not happy with. Hmm. Because chances are the client is going to approve that. And then you're going to be, you know, backpedaling, saying this is not perfect, etc., etc. So our rule was, if you taking three alternatives to the client, the worst of the three will be picked by the client. So if you can live with that, go ahead. Otherwise, take only two.
Right.
If you don't have to, take only one. It's fine. Right? Don't take what we call, don't take alternatives as fodder. Saying, you know, if I don't carry six alternatives, you know. But, you know, there are agencies and I'm sure there are different companies operate differently. There are some people I know who actually take 10 alternatives, you know, to client. I remember in my early days, there was a particular campaign which, and we didn't have the right solution. So we actually took 10 campaigns to the client. And in the end, the client asked, you're presenting 10 alternatives. What does it mean? So we asked him, so what do you think it means? So he said, well, I should not be advertising the product. I said, yes, you should not be advertising the product because I don't think we are ready to advertise it.
Hmm.
There are enough issues for you to handle otherwise. So he said, got it. So we didn't run the campaign.
Interesting. So you get clarity from confusion.
Absolutely. You create confusion and then from that confusion arises clarity, right? So it worked. I mean, it worked well that way. It may not work the same way, you know, every time, hmm. you know. So the chapter is about, you know, the fact that you get different types of clients,
right.
and some of them are sages and some of them are, you know.
Yeah, you heroes. Mentioned the different archetypes that you apply to different clients. And it's actually a pretty long list, which I think everybody should go to the book and check out. Because there are 12 different archetypes over there and they're all very interesting. But yeah, let's talk about the few that you think are interesting particularly.
Yeah, okay. So I think let me talk about what happened in this particular case. You know, the client, you know, Ramesh Ramanathan at Sterling is a kind of guy who does a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. And so in one of the meetings, he suggested to me that, you know, I should read a particular book, which he thought would be interesting. It's about customer service. So I kind of made a mental note of it. And then a few weeks later, I was in the bookshop called Landmark. Used to be a kind of a landmark bookshop,
yes.
So to speak, in Chennai. And I went to the business section of that bookshop and I was looking for the book. And one of the sales guys came up to me and said, you know, what's the book you're looking for? And I forgot, you know, I didn't remember the name of the book. So then he said, sir, what's the name of the author? I forgot.
Hmm.
So I didn't remember the name of the author. So, and then he said, sir, do you know anything about the book? I said, look, the book is about customer service. So he kind of looked at me pretty cluelessly, you know. What interesting, what happened was the owner of the bookshop that day was in the shop and she saw this interaction happening, you know, Himu Ramaya. It was a kind of a legend in book trade. So she walked up to me and said, can I help you? So I said, look, I'm looking for a book. So she said, we'll find it for you. So I said, no, I don't think it's going to be easy because, you know, I don't know the name of the book and don't know the name of the author. So she said, well, you know, tell me something about the book. So I said, well, it's about customer service. So she said, can you say something more? I said, well, it's about an airline. So she said, which airline? I said, oh, it's probably Scandinavian Airlines System. So then she said, I think we have the book. And you won't believe it. 5 minutes later, we found the book in the thing. And then she was then telling the sales, you know, the guy, how come you couldn't find it? So I told her, look, you know, how do you expect him to find it? It's you know, I'm a crazy client. You know, I don't know the name of the book. I don't know the author. How can he help me?
Right.
She said, no. You know, the training we give our people, and I'm told that is kind of standard practice in the good old days with bookshops, is that he's supposed to look after this particular section, which is the business, you know, business tag.
Right.
And he's supposed to have read the front cover and back cover of every book in his section. And she said, look, he could have read it in a few days. You know, it's not as if so difficult. So if he had read the front cover and back cover, he would have remembered that there is this book called Moments of Truth, written by Jan Carlson, who was a CEO of Scandinavian Airlines System, who turned around the company and made a loss-making airline into a successful airline. So in a sense, for me, that make my moment of truth, finding the book Moment of Truth was also a moment of truth.
Right.
You know, that's a great customer.
It is.
Service
it's
story.
It's inception-like in its own way.
Yeah.
No, sir, but actually, you know what, I think to kind of clarify, I think we should tell people about the story inside the book, which was so interesting, right? The story within the book itself that led you towards thinking about the customer centricity, the importance of that.
Yeah, so I think, you know, very often we talk of customer centricity in a sense, in a very facile manner. But reality is successful companies have to understand that, you know, you're serving the customer finally, you know. And if you serve the customer well, you will be well served. And you also need to know what your company stands for and live that, you know, moment of truth, you know, all the time. So there is this old story, you know, about which we were talking about that I was at the auto show in Delhi some years ago. And we were, you know, we were the agency for Tata Motors. We were launching one of their cars the next day. And there was this young journalist from, I think, Aaj Tak, who kept coming up to me and she asked me, what is the, you know, this car is being launched tomorrow. What is the price of the car? So I said, look, I don't know. So she said, look, sir, you are the agency and, you know, I'm sure you know the price of the car. So I said, look, even if I know the price of the car, you know, I can't tell you the price of the car. You know, tomorrow they're going to announce it and you'll find out. So she said, no, I want to know the price now. Please tell me. So I said, look, finally, you know, this happened for about 10 minutes. And finally, I got irritated with her. And I said, look, you know, why are you pestering me like this? You know, I've told you.
Right.
So she said, sir, if I don't pester you and find out news like this, how will Aaj Tak be sabse tez? So I want, you know, our channel is sabse tez, which means we need to find the news before anyone else, which is why I need... I said, yeah, I think makes sense. But in this case, sorry, ma'am, you know, I'm not going to tell you the price. But, you know, it's an interesting insight that this girl who probably has spent 2 years in that channel understood what the ethos of the channel was.
Right.
So in a sense, that was an interesting moment of truth, you know, situation
right.
for me.
Right,
yeah.
right, right. I also think it's interesting how, so I mean, like that is imbibing the company culture, right? Or imbibing the company ethos, right?
Yes.
I think there's also something interesting in the idea of how different teams get empowered within companies so that they can do their jobs more effectively, especially when they're customer facing, right? Which I think is an interesting part of that chapter that you mentioned over here.
Yeah, so, you know, the book Moment of Truth is about that, right? I mean, it's about how... At the Stockholm, I think Schiphol Airport, a customer lands up and he opens his bag and takes out his ticket. And then he discovers that he's forgotten his passport in the hotel. And in any other airline, in any other situation, the counter staff would have said, sorry, sir, we can't, you know, let you board the aircraft. You have to go back and get the passport and come. Now, the person is new to the city. He doesn't know whether he can go and get it back. Does he have enough time? He doesn't know that. So the book talks about how the girl who was staying, you know, manning the counter there said, look, sir, you will get onto that flight. Which hotel were you staying in? And she calls the hotel and tells the hotel manager, have you found a passport? They said, yes, we found the passport. It belongs to so-and-so. Yes, it belongs to so-and-so. Then she says, look, can you give it to one of those mobile couriers whom you have, and send it to me. I want the passport here in half an hour. And the passport comes in half an hour. And the passenger boards the aircraft and flies. Now, you got, you know, he's now a customer for life.
Right.
Because he was in a bit of a spot and you managed to, you know, sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think great customer service is about this, that, you know, at the moment of truth, are you able to serve the customer that
right.
much better? Do you, what they call empathy, do you have that empathy? Not sympathy, empathy. Mm. Are you in his shoes and are you solving a problem for him?
Right.
So, you know, that's critical. In any customer-facing industry, you got to make sure that your frontline staff are able to solve the problem with the customers have.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, true. Let me kind of move on a little bit from here and just I'll ask you a little bit about... So we mentioned a lot of books in the course of this chapter, right? So one question I have is you have a lot of recommendations around business books and stuff like that, but I also see that you've mentioned Von Clausewitz's On War. And so what I want to ask is, are there other genres which you think are important for people to glean lessons from besides just the standard business books that most people might read?
I think most definitely. I think, you know, just a coincidence that this particular chapter I've talked of, you know, On War, because, you know, On War by the German general, I think the World War I general,
yes.
Was, you know, I heard of it for the first time in 1990 from a client of mine called Chandu Misra. But you know, and Chandu was an interesting client because he told me, you know, once he saw me carrying a fiction book and he looked at me and said, you read fiction? So I said, yeah, I read fiction. So he said, no, I don't read fiction at all. I don't waste my time reading fiction. But, you know, that's up to him.
Right.
But I believe today young executives have to have a bandwidth. So not only should they read books like Marketing Warfare or On War or Strategy or Sun Tzu and stuff like that,
right.
but they also have to read other kinds of books. It could be books on technology, you know, books on artificial intelligence, you know, machine learning. Or it could be, you know, books on genome, like, you know, Matt Ridley was in Bombay recently and I heard his talk. And
I
you know,
met him on Sunday.
Ah, I was there as well.
We did a podcast episode with him on Sunday, so
oh,
I had gone to record that with him.
Right, so I, in fact, I carried two of the books which you know, I had of his, got them autographed. So I think today we are living in a world which is part fuzzy, part techie.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be successful in any role, I'm not just talking of business, any role, you got to have both, you got to develop a T personality.
Mm-hmm.
T personality means you need to know a little bit about a lot of things
right.
and a lot about something.
You know? Okay.
So you got to be a T.
Right.
And, you know, you work with different clients, you know, and you get to meet different types of people and they can tell you a lot of new things. And that's what my, you know, book Sponge is all about.
Right.
That, you know, not all clients are the same. Carl Jung talks of 12 different types of, you know, personalities.
Right.
So there is, you know, there is the innocent, the regular guy, the hero, the outlaw, the explorer,
right.
the creator, you know, the ruler, the magician, the lover, the caregiver, jester, the sage. Every single type of client is going to teach you something.
Right.
So are you ready to listen?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think that's a great way for us to end this episode right now, because I think that gives people a lot to look at. They should go back and check out the different archetypes and how you apply them in different places. I think that's a really interesting spot.
I think, you know, if you can categorize a client into a particular archetype,
right.
you can do a lot to make sure that he agrees and he buys or whatever
right.
you say. So I have this little thing that, you know, if the client archetype is a sage, then you know, don't send him bouquets for his birthday. Send him a book. You know,
are there other archetypes that you think apply quite regularly that you've come across? I mean, like, is sage the most common, or would you say that there are different ones that work differently? Would you have a categorization in your head as to what is the most common client that you might have come across?
I don't think you can, you know, say which is the most common type
okay.
of client, but, you know, obviously. A jester client would be rare, you know.
okay.
But, you know, you get magician clients. You know, I've had Pradeep Guha as a client. You
right.
know. You need to present anything to him as magic. And he likes that difference, you know. What's difference?
So right.
He needs some extra tadka, you know. So you need to tailor your messages depending on the client you have. Every client cannot be a sage.
Right.
And every client cannot be a hero or an outlaw or a magician. But if you understand the kind of client you have, you can enjoy their interactions a lot better. You can go prepared better. You can interact better. You can learn a lot more is what I'm saying in this chapter.
Interesting. And it's a great chapter. You guys should definitely check it out. And with that, we'll be back next week with our next episode. We'll talk about chapter 3 in that episode, the After Action Report.
Thank you.